12. The Americans arrived. That must have been a tremendous moment.
Oh, it was marvellous. I mean, there was some German cavalry there, and some of the lads just took over the horses and been riding about like cowboys. But we went in with an old German couple. Now, this old fella, he'd been in the German army in the First War. And we let him walk about with us, the two of us, this lad from Consett and me. And he said, "I haven't always lived here, you know." He says, "I've travelled." He says, "In the First War," he says, "I travelled." We says, "Well, where did you go?" He says, "You see that hill over there? I've been there during the First War." That was the extent of his travels, see. And he was a miller.
Were they very frightened, the German civilians?
Oh, yes. Yes, they were frightened then. Of course, by then, the German prisoners were in a barn, the barn that we'd been in. And we were seeing them. And our lads were standing over them. And we were saying, "We'll hand you over to the Russians, you know. You'll not get taken with Americans." And they were terrified like that. They were going to end up with the Russians after marching all that far.
Were there any particular guards that you kind of exacted your revenge on when you got them caught like this?
No, there was one. He'd been particularly nasty during the march. And he'd managed to, when we were in this village, to get a group of prisoners together and was marching them away back to the east. And when the American tanks came up, he ran off towards the woods. And some of the lads shouted, "Get him!" And they did. They just put the gun on him and he left. And he was still there when we left, just lying there. But after that,
the Americans would meet you. I mean, you was obviously still in an extremely hungry state, etc.
We got food off the Americans.
You have to be a little bit careful how much you weighed with your stomach being in the state they were in.
Well, it was, aye. We were, when we got back to the American camp, we were very upset with the American robe, you know.
So anyway, they've caught you, at least they've rescued you, and you're in the town. What happened next?
Well, we lived there for 2 or 3 days.
Do you remember the name of this place?
It was just to the west of, I can't remember the name of the village, but it was just west of Beirut, just west of there, probably about...
And what date would this be?
Well, I cannot tell you exactly. It must have been April, you know. It was lovely weather. I mean, the war was still a bit to go. And we stayed there with this old couple and we were quite friendly. And the old woman, she was a bit of a gossip. And she said, "There's a German officer hiding in the village." See? And we were all the other houses was occupied and we were the only two in this house. So I went out and I got the German, American sergeant. And I said, there's a German officer hiding in that house. It was a dentist's house. Staying there with his girlfriend. So he says, "Right." We got in the jeep with a machine gun. And he said, you sit there with Betsy." And I was left with a machine gun. And they rushed in. And they got him out. There was no struggle, they just got him out. And his girlfriend come running after him, crying like, but that was it. So, after that, they came with trucks, and they took us to Munich, onto Munich airfield.
Did you ever know the name of the American unit that...
It was the Third Army, it was General Patton's outfit that pushed through. And we were on this airfield, American airfield. Well, we got showers and we had to stand in a field where they dusted us down. You had that little guns like powder guns that threw you with this DDT powder, you know, deloused you and that sort of thing. And then you, some of us got bits of Yankee uniforms and things like that, you know, and well, your other stuff was just fit for burning. And then we were flown from there back to Brussels, onto an English airfield. And we were about, we were given new khaki and that by then. And we were living in Brussels for about a week. And then we were taken to Ostend and came home.
Did you get a medical at any stage?
No. We got a medical in England when we came back.
Where did you land in England?
Well, we landed at Tilbury, I think.
Came on a ferry boat or something?
Yes. It was the funny thing. It was Isle of Man ferry boat. That had been used in the Dunkirk landings, Dunkirk evacuation. And
what was your reception like when you got to Tilbury?
Well, we were pushed into an army camp. We went from Tilbury, we went to, let's say, no, near, was in, on the outskirts of London.
Was there a reception for you at Tilbury?
Oh no, it was, we were just glad to be home, like, you know, where the hell, High Wycombe, that was the camp we were sent to. It was an old American, this war American camp had been, and we were, that's where we were kitted out with cap badges and had your titles sewn on and sort of thing.
New uniforms.
And then...
Was it there that you had a medical?
It could have been, yes. And then we were taken to King's Cross and onto the train home, see.
And how many days leave did you get?
Oh, I think about 3 weeks, I think. Something like that. And of course, it was great, of course, then, being home and that.
When you... obviously, you went through your train journey, but were your parents expecting you home? Was your family expecting you home? Did they know you were coming?
Yes, they knew we were coming, but I think my brother was on the station waiting, it was like. And
that must have been quite a moment.
It was, aye.
Had you lost a lot of weight?
Well, no, I wasn't very heavy when the war started. Had about the, you know, I kept about the same weight, about just below 9 stone.
So your brother met you on the station, and then what happened?
Well, we came home and met my mother and everything. This was late at night, of course, see? And then, of course, after that, well...
Did the neighbours put on any welcoming?
No, not for me. Some of them did, but not for me. We had a welcome party in Chesley Street, say, with prisoners of war. And we all got I think it was £5 or something, you know, which was a kind of bit money them days. And we weren't badly off because we had a bank book with army credits in that you hadn't been paid during the war. But I sent money home, £180, because my sister was being married, and I'd sent this £180 out of German money. That my mate had a crown and anchor, and he'd got this German money, he had stacks of it, and you could send the German money home at the rate of 15 marks to the pound. Well, it was just like wallpaper to us, you know. Got stacks of it. So I sent £180, but they took that money out of my army money, so they robbed me of £180, really.
And was this camp money or genuine German civilian money?
No, it was camp money.
Camp money.
Camp money.
Did you be paid for working?
Well, working or gambling. You were allowed to gamble.
What was the rate of camp money would you get for working?
Oh, just about 42 pfennigs.
A week, is that all?
A day.
A day.
About 42 pfennigs a day's work.
But you sent it home and they took it out of your pay.
Took it out of my pay, really, aye.
The reception that you got at home, you know, you just say, well, I walked in and your mother must have been quite well.
Oh, yes, I was always great. Oh, very happy, everybody, yes. Oh, it was a great feeling, you know, be home.
Was it difficult settling down to home life after being away for so long and gone on this horrendous march?
Yes, well, I couldn't go into a shop. I couldn't go into a shop to buy anything. And
why was this?
I don't know. And I wouldn't ride on a bus. I mean, I walked. I used to go to Chesley Street, but I'd walk there and back rather than go on the bus. And eventually, you got out of it, that sort
what
of thing.
What about sleeping and that when you arrived?
Oh, yes, I'd no bother sleeping at all. No.
Did you have dreams, nightmares? That
no, the funny thing about it, I had nightmares before the war of being taken by the Germans. Of course, they went. So it was the opposite effect. They got rid of the nightmares. So anyway, after that, when we went back to this camp at High Wycombe, and we had to do, I think it was 3 weeks training to bring us up to going back into service.
And was this possibly Japan? The Japanese?
Oh, we were still fighting the Japanese then. But we were still there when Japan surrendered in High Wycombe.
How did you take them to coming back in effect to, I presume, strong army discipline, drilling and so forth?
Oh, you just accepted it. Wasn't too bad, okay. No.
Were there drill people who had never been out of England, or?
No, I think they'd all had some form of, you know. Anyway, army life wasn't so bad at the end of the war as it was in the beginning. It wasn't as strict. Oh, but I've missed a bit out there. When we were in that military hospital at Groundends, well, by that time, all the German barracks were turned into military hospitals. And they were staffed by nuns. And the German wounded was coming into the local railway station. And up to the... And they were got together on the parade ground, covered with snow. Got together with snow. Strip off to their bandages and into the showers. And that sergeant majors were brutal as well. Into the showers. Now we had to go in and clean the showers out after.
And this was their own wounded?
Their own wounded. Clean the showers out. And there was a foot lying there. A black foot. And black fingers, you know, among the bandages. They took the bandages off and they just dropped off at the nearest joint, frostbitten. And that was it. There was a lot of badly wounded back in these hospitals.
What date would this be?
Oh, that was 40... early 42, I think. Yeah. When the wounded was coming back. Yeah. And they were the only ones that got white bread. They had a small white wheat loaf kept for the wounded. And we had this chap, he was the ace of fiddlers. And the nun was cutting his bread into a little wicker basket. And he was whipping it out as she was putting it in. And just standing beside her so she couldn't see him with the hood, you know. He was a dead crafty.
You must have relied heavily on men like this that had this natural knack of...
We all got it.
You all got it.
Oh, aye. You could pinch blankets under the guard's nose. You got that crafty.
How important was the comic, the comedian amongst you?
Oh, very good. Yes. We used to get fellas, used to have a boost you up on a Saturday night, you know, telling all these mostly smutty jokes, you know.
Being hungry for so long in a prison camp, did thoughts of food fill your mind constantly?
All the time. You and some of the chaps used to talk about nothing else. You know, the meals they'd had and that. We used to, early days, I remember, working down by the riverside, the River Vistula in Grauders. And a Polish girl would come walking past and say, "Boy, I couldn't have do something with that." But it was a loaf of bread she was carrying in her arm. That was the only thing that interested you. You had no sexual fancies. Well, that's about it, I think. And,
you've got you back to where you were training, you said. You'd gone back to High Wycombe and you were training there for a while.
Yes.
What happened to you after that?
Well, they sent us to a return service depot in Colchester. Let's see, do. Aye, Colchester. And it was returned clothing and things. And the first job we had, there was two of us with two women sorting out returned ATS underwear, see? And there were shirts and everything. Well, we were the best dressed men in Colchester.
Cause not the underwear, though.
No. We kitted ourselves up with shirts, any good shirts we could get hold of, and ties, loads of ATS ties, and we're wearing the... We were the best dressed men in Colchester with anything we could nick in these return stores. And the chap, we were living in the married quarters, just the old married quarters, just the two, wooden huts. And on the end of the married quarters was, I think it was the Pioneers' cookhouse. So we didn't go to our own cookhouse for food, we got fed on the best in this town. And if they wanted a belt or any equipment, we would just nick it for them and give them it. And they would supply us in kind with chips and steak and things like that. So we didn't go to the cookhouse. So we only had one actual duty while we were there, and that was telephone orderly through the night, see. So we were down the town, we were drinking, and the chap says, "You should have been on telephone duty tonight." So me and my mate says, "Oh, we'll go and look at closing time." So we went back, and this an app was on the notice board, and this chap was doing it for us. So he says, "We'll square him up, see, he'll do it for us." So we were in there, and an officer walked in, and he says, "And I suppose you'll be the bloke that's supposed to be on telephone duty." I said, "Well, I didn't look at the notices. I've been a prisoner of war." He says, "So have I," he says. "I'll make it bloody hot for you in the morning." So I had to go in the morning, you know, to face the officer. It was a different officer. And I said, "Well, had a stomach upset or something or that." So I got let off with 3 days confined to camp. So I went to this sergeant and I said, I've got to report to you 3 days to go and find a camp. He said, don't think I'm stopping in camp for you to report. He says, if you want to report to me, report down the town in the pub. That was a good fight to come. But come the Saturday, I had to go on the Colchester football ground, making the half time, cutting oranges up and that for the half time. And that was my punishment, that. So that wasn't too bad. But then and after that, we were demobbed and sent home, and that was it.
Well, this would be after the war had ended both in Germany and Japan.
Yes.
What date were you demobbed?
Well, it was 46.
You must have been feeling a little frustrated that you were home, the war was over, and you were still waiting for a demob.
Oh, not really. We were having a good time, but really.
Where were you demobbed?
At Northampton.
And what was the process that you had to go through when you got there?
Well, we were sent up to this army camp in Northampton, and then we had to go through sort of a clothing depot, you know, and you handed, well, what suit you fancied, in a raincoat or whatever, and a trilby. I got a trilby and shoes and all the rest of it. And then you...
Were they good quality material for
Well, yes, time? For the time of the year, that time. And you got through there, and then you were finished. You train ticket and off. That was it.
And presumably they balanced up all your pay and your savings.
Yes, and it was given into a... I think I put it into a post office bank book or something.
Do you recall how much that came to after... Years of war?
About £135. But they'd taken 180 off us. So I'd lost over half of it. What I should have had, but never mind. It would have been spent by now. So that was it.
When you were demobbed, obviously you'd go home, and was there a job for you waiting?
Well, I got a job practically straight away at the ICI. There was plenty of work at that time.
Looking back over the years, you were a prisoner from June 1940, right through to the bitter end almost.
May 1940. Yeah.
That was a long time. Looking back over that time, what were your worst moments?
Well, the worst moments were going into the prison camp and the march back. And I think the march back was the worst. Because it was 3 months, the march back. The march in took 3 weeks, but the march back was 3 months. It was really rough, bad that.
How important were the Red Cross to you as a prisoner?
Well, they kept us going, really, the Red Cross. Without the Red Cross, I think, a lot of us would have just perished, I think. Very important. I always remember thinking to myself, when this is over, or the next war, I said, you know, you always thought about the next war, I'll work for the Red Cross. Well, I did work for the Red Cross when I came back, like, later on.
And mail itself, there must have been occasions when you were in the prison camp when, certainly with some of you, mail wasn't coming through, and that would be very important in your life at that time.
Yeah, well, it was very sporadic, you know. You'd get it and then you wouldn't. I remember there was once when we were in this camp where the chemicals were. And by that time, you were getting more or less fluent with the Germans, see. And they said to them, get this lad, you know, get your friends round him. When you read this letter out to this lad, and it was his wife had an affair with a Canadian soldier. It was finished now, of course, but of course he'd left her with a baby. And she said to make it up with him, she was going to buy him a motorbike. So they read this out to this chap, And his reaction was, "Oh, geez," said, "I hope it's a Norton." That was his reaction to it.
The listening men have got bad news, really bad news.
Oh, there would be the mothers dying or whatever.
Do you have any experience of that with your friends? Or?
Not really. But there must have been chaps had bad news. Well, I mean, in London, there was people killed, a relative killed there, but the mail was bad then. You didn't get to hear of it, you see. At that time, they were, well, the Germans win the war, they didn't give a damn, really.
And what was the best moment of your army career, or moments?
Of the wartime, you mean? Well, that one time, it was the middle of winter, and I think it's on tape, this. The middle of winter, and we were quarantined for chickenpox.
That was a good time, wasn't it?
That was a good time, because we were kept in, and it was bitter winter, and we had 4 Red Cross parcels each. We had bags of good eats, as we called it. Yeah.
Have you thought of, or did you keep contact with your army regiment after the war, and did you become an old comrade or a member of the association?
No, really, I didn't have any contact till the first wife died. And then a chap to me said, "Why don't you join the fellowship?" See, well, I joined the Legion, it was a local place, and then I joined the fellowship. And I go there tomorrow night. You go once a month to the fellowship. And it's formed after the First War, this. And it's Fellowship of Service.
Ex-service
men, yeah. And you have a sing-song, and you get up and play the mouth organ. So I was the one tune, though, or she was Anna. You know, that carried me right through that.